Blog Talk Radio.
Another From a Christian Perspective with Prophetess Joyce Payne over the Bachelor Pad Network. I hope that you are doing well today and enjoying the blessings of the Lord. And remember, God has it all in control. On last week, I had a special guest who was Bishop Patrick L. Wooden, Sr. of the Upper Room Church of God in Christ. We were engaged in a conversation regarding voting, politics, and the Black community. And because we were not able to conclude that conversation on last week, we will conclude it on next week, but I want you to enjoy listening to that continuing conversation today.
Donald Trump ran on building the wall and still got 38% of the Hispanic vote. 38%, can you believe that? He got 61% of the white female vote. Now, what is my point? My point is other people's votes are for grabs. If we showed people, politicians, that ours were too, and that you won't just get our vote simply because you got a D in front of your name, and you won't just lose my vote simply because there's an R, we, the African Americans, would be the big winners.
Well, I also noticed in an article that I was reading as well from the Religious News Service that came out a couple of days ago, and it spoke about two Black Baptist denominations. One is called the Progressive National Baptist Convention, and the other one is the National Baptist Convention for the USA, and that they had declared that they would stand apart from white liberals and conservatives alike while seeking to address a politically divided nation. So they were dealing with the fact that neither one of these parties, as you said, are really dealing with the African-American problems, and they're basically ignoring us even though they solicit our votes. So how do you feel? What do you feel about that? What do you believe? What position can we take if we are going to stand apart from both parties?
I think in standing apart, what would make us effective, if as we stand apart, we are also intellectually honest. And here's what I mean. In standing apart and declaring that both parties should work for our vote, I think that with the courage to stand apart, we should also have the courage to reward and acknowledge contributions or gains that either party make that help us. Now, I'll give you a case in point. Our unemployment under the current president is historically as low as it has ever been. Our income is up, and that's a good thing. Some of us behave as though we've sinned to even want to mention it. The D.C. voucher program, I'll get another example. I'm a strong proponent for choice in education. And the reason I am is I think that the more choices you have, the better off you are. And choice makes every entity better. If there was only one fast food restaurant in the world, if McDonald's was the only one, I guarantee you they wouldn't operate at the level that they operate now. They just throw anything at you because, you know, you don't have a choice. You either go to them or you go home and eat. But because there's competition, everybody has to come up if they want to stay in business. So I think competition and choice in education is a good thing. Right now, I've been downtown Raleigh. Now, let me rephrase this. And when we were trying to fight to get choice in education passed in Raleigh, for instance, every Democrat, and I was there in the chamber. Well, 90% of those who opposed choice in education, children actually went to a private school. Now, they saw the value of the private school, and these were both white and Black liberal Democrats who had their kids in private school, but they didn't want a voucher system that would open up an opportunity for some person of color who perhaps couldn't afford it for their kid to go to a private school. Now, the argument was that a private school voucher would take money from the public school system. The truth is, it works just the opposite. If there's an empty seat in that classroom because a parent decided to let their child take a shot at a private school through a voucher, because whether your child is in public or private school, everybody pay the taxes to support the public school system. So if you're going to take the tax money out, why not give them the opportunity? All right, the public school, let's say it costs $15,000 to educate that kid for a year, or $10,000. And let's say there's a private school, they only cost $5,000. Well, if you get a $5,000 voucher, the public school is still left with an empty seat and $5,000. That's a surplus. If it was a kid in the seat and you got $10,000, but you got to spend the $10,000 on the kid. Well, if you don't have the kid because the kid is going to another school, then there is still the $5,000 that they can spread around and do some other good things with, but then the other five out of that ten puts the kid in a private school. I believe that things like that, if there are elected officials who look favorably toward putting money in choice in education, such as what the current administration is looking at and want to pour money into, I think that as we stand independently and we see movement that is positive movement for us, then we should acknowledge that. And if we see something on either side that works against us, then we should say, we should speak out against that. But to be an independent voice, if we're going to be truly independent and stand and collect ourselves and stand alone and have real influence, then we still got to be, at least have the courage to be intellectually and politically honest, that if we see something that is working in our favor, then applaud that politician, be it Democrat or Republican, if it's working in our favor. Now, I don't see how, and you just jump in, I don't see how supporting anybody who supports the extermination of our people, if people aren't allowed to be born, that can't work in our favor, because we need numbers. I want your audience to hear this. We need numbers. The name of the game in politics is votes, numbers. Politicians don't visit churches that have three members. They go to where the votes are. Now, that church with only three members may be a church that's pleasing God, maybe a church that's getting the job done. There's nothing wrong with a church with three members. Nothing. And if they stay before the Lord will grow that church. So I'm not criticizing a small church. But the politician's not going to visit that church because there are no votes there. They go to where people are. Now, we got to, as a people, we got to understand the ministry and the wisdom in keeping our numbers up, because as our numbers dwindle, and nothing is hurting our numbers, you and I talked about this, like abortion, as our numbers dwindle, our influence dwindles when it comes to politics. And when the Hispanics are coming over legally and illegally, and their numbers are growing. I was listening today that even in Maxine Waters' district in California, in Los Angeles, a district that, by the way, she doesn't live in, but over in her district now has become majority Hispanic, because the politics of it is many blacks in L.A. proper are being replaced or driven out, and they're being replaced not necessarily by whites, but by Hispanics. We've got to be honest about what's going on and work on, from the pulpit to the door, with our politicians and everybody else, you know, tell the truth to our people about the power of these numbers, because there are certain black elites, and there are elites on both sides, Republican, Democrat, black and white, certain elites that believe that these things won't eventually affect them, but these things eventually affect all of us.
Well, the reason why I wanted to do this broadcast and to discuss these things is because I believe that particularly the Black Christians do not look into these issues to find out exactly what's going on. And I know that we don't discuss a lot of these things in our churches, but in order for the Black voter to be informed, they need to know a lot more about these particular issues and the stand of both parties.
Yes,
I was also reading in the same article that it basically said that the Democrats need to start talking more about God because the Democrats are not seen as being a religious group. But this article also went on to say that Nancy Pelosi was saying that the Democrats is the big tent party and that it encompasses a lot of different groups of people and that it should also expand to include the anti-abortion group. So basically what this article is talking about is that both parties need to embrace the evangelical group and to talk about God. And to give, because the Republican Party has basically purported to be the religious group.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I know that there are religious people that are also on the Democratic Party, but the Democrats don't really talk about God or about anti-abortion sentiments. So
well, you know what it is?
Go ahead and tell me.
The reason that is if the Democrats talk anti-abortion, then the Democrats go against their own party platform. See, the thing about the Democrat Party is the support for the killing of the unborn is in their party platform. Also, in their party platform is the support for lesbian, homosexual, transgendered people. Now, in the Democrat Party platform, I'm sitting there looking at it, Democrats believe that LGBT rights are human rights and that American foreign policy should advance the ability of all persons to live with dignity, security, and respect regardless of who they are and who they love. Now, notice this. They say regards to who they are and who they love. And I used to hear President Obama and Mrs. Obama says people shouldn't be judged by who they love. People should have the right to love who they want to love. And I noticed that when they made that statement, they never preferenced it. So you know what they're doing? They have set up the argument of the pedophile because the pedophile loves little children. See, if you're going to have in your platform that people shouldn't be judged or hindered or anything based on who they love, well, now the pedophile says, well, what about me? So the reason if you have a party that endorses a lifestyle, and this is to your Democrat Christians who are listening, if you have a party that endorses a lifestyle that the God of the Bible calls an abomination, how do you square that?
Well, let me say this, that I believe that we should be taught basically about morality in our churches. And then when we look at the political parties, we need to see what are they providing for the people as far as economic provisions and, other things that are needed that the government needs to provide. For instance, Nancy Pelosi was saying that she believes that the Democrats should extend their platform to include people that are anti-abortion. Abortion is, I believe, it's a moral decision. The Republicans have basically said that they are the moral party. Well, I believe that we should have our morality basically understood as far as being a Christian. We know what's wrong or right, and we get our moral values basically from our understanding of our teaching about God, and we get that in our churches. But when it comes to the political party, I believe we need to look more at how finances are being dispersed. We need to look at who's providing social programs that are needed, because basically the Black community need a lot of the social programs that are provided. And the Democrats seem to be the ones who want to provide more of the social needs for the black community, whereas the Republican is trying to cut those social programs. So as the black community, if we're looking at which party is going to help us with the social needs that we have, it seems to be more of the Democratic Party rather than the Republican Party. But yet the Democratic Party does not purport to be Christians, and they are willing, as you said, to allow the LGBT community to be a part of their platform and abortion. But those are moral decisions, not necessarily, and I know it's part of their platform, but they are thinking in terms of changing their platform. And if they do, we need to be able to make a decision about which party is going to be more beneficial for the black community. And we need to look at the social reform, their social programs, more so than their morality. Because if I'm going to vote for either party, I've already got my moral values. And so when I go into that party, I'm already going to believe what I believe regarding God and my values. But now I'm looking at your politics. How are you going to provide for me my social needs? How are you going to disperse the economic provisions in the community? Who's going to provide schools and who's going to provide all of the things that you discussed are very important. But that deals a lot with our finances. And I already have my moral values because I got that from the church that I attend. Many of the people that are going are working with the Republican Party, a lot of them are Christians or profess to be Christians, but they're not looking for the Republican Party to give them moral guidance. They're looking at the money, how the money can be divided, and what benefits that can they get out of the Republican Party. Do you agree?
Partially. Here's where I disagree. First of all, apparently, now, I'm glad you have your morals together. But looking at the plight of the African-American community, I would say one of our number one problems is immorality. 73% of our children are born to homes where the parents aren't married. That's immoral behavior. We know that when a child is born into a single-parent home where there's no dad, mom and dad's not married, the likelihood that they are going to grow up in poverty goes up exponentially. The likelihood that they would drop out of school goes up exponentially. The likelihood that they would end up in prison goes up exponentially. So when you talk about morals, I guess maybe a lot of black people aren't going to church or not paying attention to the preacher, or perhaps the preacher's not preaching morals because Patrick Monahan said back in the 70s that many of the gains that the African-American community have gained through civil rights will be lost through their immoral behavior. Now, at the time he said this, he was labeled a racist and, you know, he said, how could you say such a thing? Well, at the time he said that 25% of black kids were born into single-parent homes. Today, it's 73%. Just drive through. To go to prisons, most of the guys who are in prison didn't have a dad in the home. So these are moral issues. And so we need to, you can't downplay moral issues because most of our issues, most of our financial issues are tied to our moral behavior, or should I say, our immoral behavior. And we need to put a stress on morals. Now, that the Democrat Party now did decide to make a moral statement when they decided to morally endorse lifestyles that the Bible says are wrong. So what the Democrats have done well, because people would tell me, wouldn't, you can't legislate your morality. And I would always say to them, yes, but you can't legislate your immorality either. We have watched the legislating of immorality. We have seen the killing of the unborn by the Supreme Court made into law. We have seen marriage redefined to include persons that the God of the Bible never included. made into law. We are normalizing. We are pretending that a transgendered person, a man who thinks he's not a man who thinks he's a woman, we're pretending that he don't have a psychological issue when he's got to have a psychological issue when he looks in the mirror and everything he says say man, but there's a voice in his head that says he's a woman. And so the rest of us are supposed to play the game and pretend that this guy is a gal or this gal is a guy. These are moral issues that cannot be downplayed. And the moral issues, they have financial ramifications and consequences. Now, in terms of helping the poor with government programs, I agree with that part. But I believe this. I believe that we should have social programs, and I want your audience to know that they're listening to a guy who came up in a single parent home, and yes, we did spend time on welfare. So I am a welfare recipient. My children never did. When I got grown, I've never done that. But as a child, God bless my mom. This is what we came up on. But now, here's what I want to say to you. Government programs, some of these social programs, they come with lifelong dependency. It's more of a trap than it is a leg up. It's more of a trap. When the sister, I remember when my mama tried to get off of welfare. Oh, let her get a little job. Let her try to get a little income. The government would shut everything down, just cut it off altogether, because they did not want her to become self-sufficient. I favor programs.
I
also favor jobs. When a person get a job and the dignity of work, and we work toward getting jobs for individuals, now their income earning potential will be much greater than what the government may give them to live on. So I think that there should be a two-pronged approach with that.
Well, I was going to mention that I know back in the day that women weren't allowed to work while they were receiving welfare, but I believe those programs have changed, and I'm not up to date on them now, but I know that it changed to a welfare-to-work program where people were being required to go and get a job, and then they were being trained for jobs. So that does seem like it was giving them a way out of the welfare program.
That was under Clinton, and he did a great job with it. Because remember, with Clinton and the Republicans and Newt Gingrich, that Contract of America, they put time limits on welfare. All of that was undone under President Obama. And the way the system is working now, she have another baby, she gets more money. These things, if you look at it, it's been a trap for our people. It's been a trap.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm not for the government helping people, but I don't want the help to be a trap to where now it's generational. Mom grew up on it. Her daughter is on it. And now the grandbaby is on it, and it's become systemic and generational, where somebody has got to break out of that. So I think that should be the approach.
Well, let me just say this, that I believe that that's where the religious community should come in. It's okay for the government to provide programs that will support the Black community and others as well. But we need to have some input into the government to tell them, okay, it's fine that you're providing funds for a Black woman who has a baby, but she does need to be able to get off of that program eventually. So whereas that program was changed, where it started out and it was going in the right direction by providing assistance for her to be able to find a job and to get work skills and to get out of the program, if another administration came in and shut that off so that she was again locked into the program, that's where the church needs to raise its voice and say, we're not going to allow you to do this to her. And that's the reason why we need evangelicals and spiritual-minded people on both sides of the party, because if it's the Democrats that are providing those social programs that help her, then she also needs a spiritual guidance as well that's going to help her to get out of that system and to progress into the community and be self-sufficient. So we need Christians on both sides of the aisle, both in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, because both parties provide something, but we still need the voice of the Christian community to help people on both sides. So whereas the Republican Party has declared or believed themselves to be the more moral party, the Christian Party, then if there are no Christians that are standing up for those that are part of the Democratic Party, are we leaving those people without any spiritual guidance? I don't think we should do that. I think that there should be Christian evangelicals that are speaking out on the Democratic side as well, because there are, as you said, I think you said 90% of African Americans vote Democrats. Well, there are black churches. There are religious people that are in that group as well, and they should be speaking up for the African Americans when their programs are being shut down or being changed. They need to make their voices heard.
I agree with you. And just like right now, the President Trump is seeking to pour billions of dollars into expanding the private school scholarship nationwide. See, the notion that Republicans or conservatives don't want to do anything to help the poor in terms of government programs, that is a notion that could be debated and challenged on so many levels, because there's ample evidence that simply is not the case. But there is that. I think that what there may be a basic fundamental belief is, difference is, one party may lean toward, and it may lean toward more of a private sector solution to the ills of the poor, whereas another party may lean more toward a government handout, government program solution to the ills of the poor. Now, if you notice, most other communities in America, the Asian community, even the Hispanic community, and most other communities, they work hard not to get the government programs. They lean more toward business. They lean more toward self-sufficiency. I personally believe that in terms of government, in terms of winning civil rights gains and things like that, for the most part, we've gone as far as the law and policies, for the most part, not everywhere, can take us. I think that we need to think more about owning our own businesses and being more self-sufficient. I think that we should work harder toward getting government, doing businesses that will help us get the contract with the government. This is one of the things that you and I talked about. When President Obama was the president, he closed much of the minority business development offices, whereas minorities already was getting a minuscule amount of government contracts. Under his reign, he closed many of the offices down. So many of the people whom we think are on our side, and this was a column by William Reed, a Newswire columnist, but many of the people that we think are on our side aren't necessarily on our side, and a lot of people that we think is against us aren't necessarily against us. But I say to my brothers and sisters, of which I am a proud member of this community, we don't want Big Brother government to be the end all and the be all of our existence.
You've been listening to From a Christian Perspective with Prophetess Joyce Payne over the Bachelor Pad Network. where my special guest has been Bishop Patrick L. Wooten, Sr. of the Upper Room Church of God in Christ. Our conversation did not conclude this week, so we will be continuing it next week. And know that you can always listen to the podcast again over the Bachelor Pad Network. Just go to bachelorpadnetwork.com or listen to it on this network. For more information regarding me and my ministry and books, you can go to my website, joycerevapainministries.com. Thank you so much for listening, and do remember to vote on November 6th. God bless you until next week.